Well, good evening. I'm excited to be here tonight. I've spent evenings over the years sitting in the audience, and I have to say it's a little daunting being up here, sitting in the seat. So I get a good chance to practice what I'm planning on teaching tonight, which is self-compassion, making friends with ourselves. I have been into this practice for a long time, that is the practice of mindfulness and meditation. My advisor in graduate school in psychology told me in 1976 that if I wanted to really learn about the mind and heart, I should go sit with these guys, Jack Kornfield and Joseph Goldstein. So I had not really done any meditation, and I went with five of us went to sit a 2-week silent retreat. And that was really life-changing for me. I was kind of, by nature, a little bit nervous and anxious, and it showed me a whole different way of looking at the world and being in the world and being myself in the world. So I've always been really grateful to the practice of meditation. I think it's a wonderful practice when we use it kindly towards ourselves. And I've had a lot of opportunities to study the mind and study and be with groups of people doing this, like-minded people, so that we can kind of calm ourselves, calm our restless minds, and pull back that tendency to grasp and reach and strive and try to be better and better and better and relax back into the moment and just accept who we are right now. So it's been a really positive practice for me. It helps me align with my own values. And one of the most beautiful parts of it is being with like-minded people who share those values and joining together, because it's so much more nourishing to be with other people who share your values and want to be good to themselves and do good in the world. So thank you for being part of this group tonight, and I sincerely hope that you'll hear something tonight that's really helpful to you, some kind of idea that you can take out and practice in your life. I got really hooked on meditation, and in fact, after doing 3 long silent retreats, I went to a gathering, which is where I met James. And a couple years later, we got married. And some of you have even met our son, Adam, who I feel lucky. I feel grateful to be in my family. I feel grateful for like-minded friends. And I was one of the group that decided that we should have a retreat center in Northern California. And we looked for land and a place to have it for a long time. And I remember when I was pregnant with Adam, which meant that it was over 27 years ago, walking the land out at Spirit Rock. And because it was a little difficult for me to get around at that point. And the group of people saying, ah, this is really the place. And we didn't know exactly how we could afford it. We didn't have a lot of money. We didn't have any corporation behind us. But things just kind of worked out really nicely. Nature Conservancy actually owned the land. It was deeded to them. Somebody who wanted to give it as a tax deduction. So it made fundraising easier because we could say, hey, you can not only build a meditation center, but the money goes to Nature Conservancy to save rainforests. So it was a nice way to fundraise. And I was on the board of directors for 8 years. And when Adam became old enough, when he was about 5, James decided we better start the family program. And so I remember I was co-facilitating that, and I was driving Adam over to the Saturday family program, and he was about six, and he said, "Mom, I don't really want to go to this. I'm just doing this to make you look good." And so I said, "Adam, what do you want to do?" And he said, "I want to play Little League." And so I ended up not going to the family program. I went that day, of course, but, you know, eventually dropping off that. And I was selling hot dogs in the Little League stand. So, and, you know, that's part of my philosophy that's worked out. I really felt like it would be unfair to force him into a narrow path and say, "You've got to do this." And sure, as it turns out, we are fortunate because he really is into Buddha Dharma. And he went over to the Tibetan side, but that's okay. So he's a good guy, good values, and it's fine. So over the years, I've sat numerous programs, and actually last week, there are about 90 of us, me included, that were sitting at the concentration retreat out at Spirit Rock, and Gidra was there, and others were there, and it was really a nice time to practice, and some of the time it was really sweet and calming and sort of ideal. I mean, it's wonderful circumstances, beautiful land, and gourmet food. At this point, they have the chef is someone that used to work at Chez Panisse. So it's really amazing food, wonderful way to do eating meditation. The conditions couldn't have been better, and yet my mind was just kind of like going all over the place at times. And the old patterns of fixing myself, comparing myself, judging myself came up. And as things got quieter, my mental thoughts and feelings just got louder. So it doesn't mean that, as you all know, just because you practice at a certain retreat or something, that all problems disappear. But hopefully over time we gain a friendlier relationship with our own thoughts and emotions and patterns and start to become kinder towards ourselves. And there isn't just one way to meditate or one way to look at ourselves. We really have to look more deeply. What serves us? Who are we? What patterns and what exercises work for us as individuals? And that comes from just slowing down and kind of experimenting, seeing what does work. Some people need fast walks. Some people walk very slowly. Some people need longer exhalations to calm down. Some people need to, you know, wake up. And that happens internally for each of us at different times, different points in the retreat, and different points in life. So I found that doing these retreats, I used to be a school teacher. I taught for Berkeley Public Schools. I taught English as a second language. My last 10 years was to adults, and that was very gratifying. But after I retired, I realized I wanted to keep teaching. I just wanted to change the form of it. So I got trained in MBSR, mindfulness-based stress reduction. And a lot of you know what that is. That's a program that's very systematic and helps people really learn how to meditate. And I kind of wish I would have taken that program in 1976, because it took even though my teachers were very inspiring, really wonderful teachers and inspiring, the method didn't work so well for me. I just wasn't clear on the method. How do I do this? How do I bring my mind more into focus and let go of things? And so over time I've learned that, and I think structured programs are really helpful to people who want to kind of refresh their meditation practice, or people who are new to the practice. So I started teaching MBSR, And I've been happy teaching it in my home, and the people that show up and having small groups and a lot of interaction and teaching. And then a couple of years ago, in addition, I took training in mindful self-compassion, first as a student and then as a teacher. So I'm in the middle of the teacher training now, and next week I'll start working at Women's Cancer Resource Center, which is a wonderful center here down Telegraph Avenue in Oakland that serves all women who have cancer. And there's wonderful, if you have time and you're looking for volunteer opportunities, it's a great place to volunteer. People of all ages, and it's inspiring that there's a lot of young women working there as volunteers. And it mainly serves women of low income and women of color, but all women and all women are welcome. It's a wonderful hotline as well. So I've had experience working there as a volunteer, and I'm going to start teaching mindful self-compassion next week. And sometime a while back, James was saying, well, I don't know who to get for a substitute while he was teaching the Labor Day retreat right now. And I don't know why I thought it would be a good idea if I, you know, because actually I've been nervous more than once. Thinking about this. But it's given me, again, a chance to practice what I want to convey. So I want to start out with how you habitually treat yourself when you're suffering. I think that's a good thing to take a look at. And so I'd like to lead you through a short guided meditation. And so just get comfortable in whatever way you are. You like to. So think about times when you've had a close friend who was suffering in some way. Maybe they had a misfortune, or they failed at something, or they felt inadequate. How do you tend to respond to friends in such situations? Now think about times when you've been suffering in some way. You've had a misfortune, you've failed, or you felt inadequate. How do you tend to respond to yourself in these situations? Okay, so come on back. And now I'd like to ask you, you can either do this, continue on your own in silence if you prefer to do that and just continue to think about it, or you can partner with someone close by. And I'm going to give you about 6 minutes to just reflect with each other, just share anything that came up for you in this inquiry. Anything that came up with how you treat others, good friends, when they're suffering, and if there's a difference in how you treat yourself when you're suffering, when you're feeling that you've had a misfortune, or you're feeling bad, you're feeling inadequate. Is that clear? Okay, so just turn to someone near you, or you can stay quiet and think about it yourself. Well, it seems like most of us have a lot to say about this topic. Does anybody want to share with the group? We have a little time for, and we're going to use the mic. We're going to give you the mic in a moment. just wait for a moment so that you can be recorded for the tape.
Yeah, sure. As I was talking to my new friend Camille, I told her of an experience I had with a friend of mine who was dying of ovarian cancer. And she had been my friend for a very long time, and there maybe 30 years, 35 years. And there had been some ups and downs in that friendship. And when I sat with her every other day for the last month of her life, I was totally non-judgmental. I just kept her company. I didn't even talk a lot. I just sat there, held her hand. And as I was saying to Camille, my attitude about myself is the opposite. It's guilty until proven innocent. Camille liked that. But if I could handle myself the way I was with my friend, life would be beautiful.
Great. Thank you. Thank you. Okay. I wanted to say that exercise came from Kristen Neff, and she wrote this book called Self-Compassion, and she's teamed up with Chris Germer, who wrote this book, The Mindful Path to Self-Compassion. And I'll have these books both up here, so if you want to come up and just take a look at them, they're wonderful. And I wanted to tell you about their websites, Chris, because a lot of these meditations are right on the website. You can go on and you can get a whole bunch of information if you get inspired to do so. Kristen Neff is a University of Texas at Austin researcher.
Did you have her here one day?
Yes, she did a couple of years ago. Yeah. And her website is selfcompassion.org. And Chris Germer is at Harvard, and his website, he's a therapist and a professor, and his website is mindfulselfcompassion.org. So really, if you Google self-compassion, they're going to come right up. And so I urge you to take advantage of their generosity. They both sat for years, many, many Vipassana practices, and have studied with many of the teachers that we all have studied with, and do a beautiful job of looking at an area of practice which comes up for just about everyone when they're on retreat sooner or later, and that is really self-judgment, heavy self-judgment. Why aren't I good enough? How can I be better? How can I fix myself? And so we've had movements. We realized as educators that children do much better in school when they have good self-esteem. So we've really tried to address this issue as a culture. But our culture is highly individualistic, very competitive. And so there's a lot of room for us to grow in the area towards self-kindness as opposed to self-judgment, and learning how to actively soothe ourselves, calm ourselves, comfort ourselves, and treat ourselves with the care and the understanding that we offer our friends. And it's also very isolating to feel not good enough. That's one of the hardest problems with patients that end up really getting far out into psychosis and to perhaps being hospitalized, as they feel so isolated. And we do that to ourselves. We don't want to tell other people what's going on because they might judge us because we're too horrible. But it's actually not abnormal to go through feelings of self-judgment, to go through doubts and fears. It's just part of being human. And so we begin, when we really get into mindful self-compassion, we begin to see our own experience as part of the larger experience, as part of what it means to be a human being. And we recognize that life is often imperfect and unfair. And I believe the understanding of karma is things like accidents and natural disasters. That doesn't have anything to do with karma. That is accident. That is an accident. And so, but too often people, when they are really suffering, they say, what did I do wrong? Why am I going through that? And torment themselves with that, rather than acknowledging that that is part of life. So that's the aspect of self-compassion that is common humanity versus isolation. And then there's mindfulness instead of over-identification, which means that we avoid those extremes of either suppressing and pretending, oh, everything's fine, just completely fine, or exaggerating the other swing. It's the worst thing that ever could happen, and I hope nobody ever finds out. You know? And we can bounce between those two ends instead of just simply being with the pain that often isn't as bad as what we've made it out to be. I remember I was on a 3-month retreat at Insight Meditation Society in 1981, and remember quite well finally really addressing myself in terms of loneliness and realizing how much I had filled up my life, how busy I had been in order to avoid that feeling of emptiness and loneliness, and how much actually easier it was just to feel the feeling. Yeah, it doesn't feel good to feel lonely. Feelings don't last that long. Feelings actually, neuroscience is telling us these days, feelings last about possibly 90 seconds if we don't hold on to it. The problem is we hold on to them. We make them a thing. We make them a thing about us. We get all identified. Pretty soon, I am a lonely person. I'm the loneliest person on the planet. And we go on and on and on, right? Yeah. So, I mean, we're just human beings going through trying to do the best we can with our lives. And physiologically, it doesn't help us. Self-criticism activates our threat defense system. It shoots cortisol and adrenaline into our bodies so that we're just, you know, we're amped up, as opposed to self-compassion that which actually activates the mammalian caregiving system. Self-compassion actually releases oxytocin and opiates in the body. And oxytocin is that trust and bonding hormone that's released in mothers when they get pregnant and when they give birth, because it creates that bond between mothers and their children. And men have it too. And it's really good to release it. And one of the ways we can release it is simply giving ourselves some kind of soothing, putting our hands on our heart. Try this. Just put your hand on your heart for a moment with the intention of soothing yourself, of feeling your own compassion. And some people do it by putting their hand on their cheek, you know. Some people, it even works to put your arms like this. You can be in a meeting and everybody thinks you're just getting self-defensive, but actually all you're doing is giving yourself a hug. You're giving yourself a little squeeze, rocking yourself. So whatever works for you, but actually touch can be so soothing. That's why as a teacher, sometimes I would just put my hand, now it's kind of almost getting illegal, but you just put your hand on the student and stand there with them for a little bit, and they calm down. You know, it's just like, oh, okay, it's okay. But it's amazing. We don't give ourselves this because, like I said, we live in this competitive culture and we have this common belief that criticism will make us better. You know, and our parents had that belief and their parents had that belief. I remember when I was a high school senior and I was I was selected to be in the honors English class, and I was excited about it when I went in there. And everybody wrote their first essay, and somehow the teacher selected mine and projected it up on the board and went through and said all the errors in front of the entire class about what was wrong. And I just kind of crumbled. That was the point. I went on, I went to the university, I graduated, blah, blah, blah. But at that point, I just kind of turned from being an enthusiastic writer to I don't know if I can do this. And it was painful when I had to do projects probably many of you have experienced that. It's painful. Like, I have to turn in something. I have to go public with something. So it's been a real misperception that we will become better out of sort of harsh criticism. Actually, that doesn't mean that we can't give constructive feedback. It's more about the shaming quality. And everybody has their own sensitivities to what's shaming. But really be careful about what you're saying to yourself. What are those thoughts? What are those emotions that are coming from those thoughts? Because it doesn't do you any good, really. Take it from me, because I used to freak out before my finals or before a big paper. I still went through and I did them, but I think I would have done better had I been more relaxed about it. I certainly did better in the past, not past courses than I did in the graded ones. You know, because I was more interested. I could come more alive. So the research shows, there's abundant research. Self-criticism makes us more anxious, more depressed, and more afraid of failure. And that harsh self-criticism, bottom line, comes from the fear of being worthless. And that's a heavy place, because we're like, that's saying that someone else or myself isn't worth being here. So instead, if we can motivate ourselves with love and compassion, the kind of compassion that I met everybody in this room gives other people, gives other causes, wants the best for other people. If we can do that for ourselves, then if we can hang out with people that do that and we have a shared agreement, then we start to feel loved and we start to feel lovable and we enjoy loving others. And it's a virtuous cycle instead of the downward cycle. It's the reason why you come together to be in this sangha, because there's something happening. There's some connection between you. You're saying, yeah, we're all worth it. We're all good people. We're all valuable here. We deserve self-compassion. We deserve compassion to ourselves and others, everybody else. So self-criticism asks us, if you're good enough. And self-compassion asks, what's good for you? There's a big difference in that question. And the you includes the wider world. We don't prioritize our needs over other people's needs, but neither do we subordinate them. Our needs are just as valid as everybody else's. So I wanted to teach you a short meditation that I've found really useful in my practice. And that's when, in the process of my mindfulness, when I realize, oh, you know, things are getting kind of grim and dark here. For example, I was with James and we were in the airport in Brisbane, Australia, and I went, uh-oh, I don't have my passport in my purse. And James turned to me and said, well, that's suffering. You know? And my mind started to spin out. Well, is it in my suitcase? Because I would never do that. But at least I'm flying internally from Brisbane to Sydney. So if it's in my suitcase, that's good news. And well, if it's not my suitcase, you know. So there was nothing I could do except show my boarding pass and get on the plane. And I did this practice, and I would really recommend it to you. So think of something, not real heavy suffering, but something light that you can handle in the next couple of minutes, just right here, you know. Something really light, but a little bit of suffering, just enough to make it keep you awake. All right. Now, if you want to put your hand on your heart or use any kind of touch that feels soothing, take a couple of deep, slow breaths, perhaps extending the exhale longer than the inhale. Now speak very kindly to yourself internally, saying, this is a moment of suffering. Suffering is part of life. May I be kind to myself. Once again, this is a moment of suffering. That's mindfulness. Suffering is part of life. That's acknowledging our common humanity. May I be kind to myself. That's our intention. And for the last phrase, you can actually use other phrases. You can say, may I accept myself just as I am? Or may I be strong? Or may I be wise and change what I can? Does anybody have any questions or anything they want to share regarding that process? Back there, Liz.
I had a similar experience. This summer I was in an airport in Lusaka, Zambia, and suddenly I realized I didn't have this thing in my purse that had previously had my passport in it, but I fortunately didn't have, but it just had some stuff, and I thought I had left it on the counter, you know, at the marketplace or something, and it just was beating myself up, going nuts. So how could I do that? How could I be so foolish and so careless? And I didn't go through this process. What I did instead was said, okay, you know, you're going on this long flight. By the time you get off the flight, you won't be worrying about it. And I was able to let go of it. Of course, it was in my suitcase, which I had already checked. But it could have been easier on myself if I would have remembered to go through this little process instead, rather than just beating myself up and saying, okay, I know in 10 hours I won't be worried about it. But I had to crack up when you said that, you know, you had that experience, because I had just had the same one.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
But I was alone and nobody could tell me, you know.
Right. Well, thank you. We do that. We do that as a, that's part of our life, you know. It's so ingrained to beat ourselves up because we're bad, because we blew it. As if nobody else would or should or could or.
You know how a few minutes ago you shared, leading up to this, the thoughts and feelings you were having? How about now while you are doing it?
How was I feeling?
How are you feeling as
right this moment? I feel better. I feel better. Actually, talking to you guys is a lot easier than my fantasies of what was going to happen.
I was listening to a Rick Hansen recording talking about our propensity for the mind to imagine, and then the actual experience so often has absolutely nothing to do with the fantasy we create. And I was wondering,
did that happen?
Yeah. This is your reality.
Uh-huh. Yeah, I woke up a week ago at Spirit Rock in the middle of the concentration retreat in the middle of the night thinking, what on earth was I thinking? Why would I want to get up in front of a bunch of people and have to, you know, do something? It was like, oh.
But you're having fun now.
Now it's much easier. I mean, you know, because you guys are participating. You haven't, half of you haven't walked out and, you know, so.
What?
You know, the mind can just go, you know. I did practice some compassion for myself after a while because it just got too much. I mean, but thank you.
I, for one, am grateful you chose to do this tonight because this has been exceedingly rewarding for me. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you. Anybody else? Oh, over here. Right over here. Thanks.
Thank you. One of the things that I thought of was a quote that I've heard, possibly James has even said it, but that pain is real, but suffering is a choice. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering what you thought about that, because that really helped me, knowing that, mm-hmm. yeah, my passport is gone, or mm-hmm. I just missed BART, or I'm late, whatever that is, that's real. Mm-hmm. And I get to choose whether or not I suffer.
Yeah, I think that... we get that choice if we can recognize that we have a choice. And then if we have enough strength to have the intention to make the non-habitual choice and say, okay, I've heard the rap, not now. I'm going to come back to the moment, be here, and do what I can. And, you know, so I agree with you if we can interrupt the loop or the tape or whatever. Yeah. Thank you. Kimmeth, back there.
There's two kinds of suffering that I've experienced. I think it's probably common. One is where there's some real grief. Something horrible has happened.
Uh-huh.
And that one's harder. But most of the time, for me, suffering is about my ego getting involved and my uh-huh. ego getting hurt. And so over the last year, I've been... When that happens, I've been thinking two things. One is that even Buddhas and Bodhisattvas were ordinary people with all these frailties before uh-huh. they became Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. So I should just, you know, accept myself. And the other one is to say, if it's hurting my ego, that's fine because my ego's a nuisance. I need to get over it.
Uh-huh, good. Great. Thank you. Yeah, and there is real suffering in the world, and it's who... You know, and it's just adding suffering to say, oh, you know, oh, my house burnt down, but I shouldn't feel bad about it. I mean, of course, you know, there's suffering and there's emotions that go with it. And to allow ourselves to have those emotions and not judge ourselves for having bad days or difficult times. Thanks. Yeah. Over here. I think he's recording it for so.
Listening to the two stories.
Yeah, hold it up.
Listening to the two stories of the passport made me reflect in a sense that the purpose of the self-blame is to perpetuate the illusion that you can control things.
Good point.
Right? Yeah.
Good point. And boy, if you're not convinced by now, how many people woke up with the earthquake? Did you guys, you know? Well, I was at Spirit Rock at that concentration retreat, and I can tell you the earthquake started at 3:20 because I was definitely moving with it. And my mind did go, where's the epicenter? And there was no internet available. And I did send Meta pretty straight from 3:20 till the manager's office opened at 6:30 in the morning. Just like my mind would go here, there, and everywhere. How's, is the epicenter in Berkeley on the Hayward Fault? Is my son alive? Is my husband alive? Different people would pop up. And then I'd say, oh, not now. Just come back. Just all you can do is Meta. It's a loving kindness for, you know, everybody. So I was very, very happy and relieved to find out nobody was killed. That was the first announcement made. Thanks. So, anybody else? Well, I wanted to and end with a song by a teacher that I think many of you know, because she's local. She's a beautiful, in every sense of the word, woman, Eve Decker. And she's a Dharma teacher in her own right. She comes here, and she's a musician. And she wrote a beautiful song called Simple Truth. And it really touches me. So I thought if you just settle back, get in a meditative space and open to the truth that she shares.
The way I see it, there are two choices. I can wait for all these voices that tell me I have made it, or I can love myself the way I am. The way I see it, there are two choices. Try to do it their way, or find my own rejoicing music and play. I've been given a responsibility to love myself like I would love a child. Chaotic, wild, and turning, building bridges, bridges burning. Just as I am, to love me. Maybe self-hatred protects me until the day no one rejects me. If I reject myself first, your coldness might not hurt as much. Maybe if I work harder, try more, do more, faster, longer, the day will come when I feel loved by everyone. I've been given a responsibility to love myself like I love trees. Okay when branches crack and fall, no striving, no have-tos at all. the sparkling green that breathes me just as I am, loves me. No, I do not have it all together. I never have, and I never will. And I know that you don't have it all together either, 'cause nothing here was made that way. We're all falling, we're all flying, we're all playing, we're all dying. We've been given a responsibility to love ourselves like we love freedom, using courage just to see the simple truth of you and me. Love looks like humble gratitude, like endless forgiveness. Just as we are, 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 just as we are. The way I see it, there are two choices. We can wait for all these voices to tell us we've made it, or we can love ourselves just as we are.
So why don't we just turn to the closing meditation, metta, loving-kindness meditation, and we'll start by just appreciating that we're here, that we're sitting here in this hall together. So send yourself some compassion if you're having a hard time. And even if you're having a good time, send yourself some loving kindness. May I be happy. May I be safe. May I be kind to myself. May I feel all the goodness inside and share my love well. And now let's share with everyone here. May we be happy. May we be safe. May we be kind to ourselves. May we feel all the goodness inside and share our love well. And now let's extend to all beings. May all beings be happy. May all beings be safe. May all beings share their love well. May all know the highest happiness. And may our coming to here together be for the benefits of all beings everywhere.